I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. Pedro Ramos, the chair of the School Reform Commission, said last week that the current structure of the Philadelphia School District doesn't work. Quote, it's not fiscally sustainable and it doesn't produce high-quality schools for all kids. The district's chief recovery officer, Thomas Knudsen, unveiled a plan last Tuesday that would dramatically restructure the district, which faces a deficit of more than $200 million. It calls for school closures, cuts in benefits and wages, the creation of networks that would run clusters of schools, a college and career-ready curriculum, and the transfer of more students to charters, which already educate about 25% of the students in the district. The results the plan promises are better and safer schools. We have a trio of guests who have joined us on Radio Times to talk about this proposal, including Thomas Knudsen. He is also acting superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia and retired last year after 10 years as CEO of the Philadelphia Gas Works. And Thomas Knudsen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us is Pedro Ramos, whom I cited. He is the chairman of the School Reform Commission, also an attorney with Trujillo, Rodriguez, and Richards, a law firm here in the city of Philadelphia. And Pedro Ramos, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here, Marty.
Also with us is Lorene Carey. She was appointed to the School Reform Commission by Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, and she is the founder and head of an arts organization here in Philadelphia called Art Sanctuary. And Lorene, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Pedro, let me begin with you. Are we talking about the end of the school district as we know it?
Well, I don't think there's I don't think it's the end of the school district as we know it, but it is the beginning, hopefully the beginning of building the school district that is really a lot more responsive to schools, acts a lot more urgently about providing safe, high quality opportunities for all kids. And that is fiscally sustainable. So to the extent the school district as we know it is one that's not fiscally sustainable and one that doesn't focus on getting kids the best quality as quickly as possible, yes, to the extent that the end as we know it suggests that anyone's going to give up on public education, no.
Well, let me turn to you, Thomas Knudsen. Something you said last week, Philadelphia Public Schools is not the school district. What did you mean by that?
The funding sources for the school district are such that we are talking what we're referring to as a portfolio of schools, wherein we have traditional schools. We also have cyber charter schools. We have charter schools. We have alternative schools. So the district is not just, or public education is not just the school district. We have to address all of these other forms of education because financially we are interrelated.
And how did the district get itself into such a financial hole? We're talking about more than $200 million, a deficit for the upcoming school year.
Yeah, this was not this did not come yesterday. It came over a number of years. Basically, there was an overreach in terms of programs that were attempted, and they didn't have the revenues to support those programs. And we're now into a major realignment that is taking hundreds of millions of dollars of costs out of the system in order to bring revenues and expenses together.
And you're talking about the state cutting back on funding for the district and also the loss of federal funds as well?
That's correct.
Are those the main two?
Those were the main two from that yes. We lost about $300 million from the state, mostly related around the stimulus funding.
Let me turn to you, Lorene, and we are going to break apart this proposal, but overall, what is your reaction to it?
I think my reaction, like many people's, and the School Reform Commission is a group of citizens that, you know, is appointed to sort of be the board, but also in a way we are citizens, you know, so I think my response was a citizen's response, which is what is this going to do for children in schools? What is this going to do for classrooms? How is this going to help? And I've gotten to understand it better asking those questions over and over again. It seems as if one of the things that is wrong is that the principals in our district who are key to leadership, they're key in any building. They absolutely set the culture driving. That we have so many hurdles for them to jump, that it is very difficult to be a great principal without also being a renegade in some ways around what some of the things the district is making happen. I was actually just in a school yesterday. It's in my neighborhood in East Falls, the Mifflin School. There's been a principal there for 3 years, Ms. Mason, who's done an excellent job. Before her, the turnover in principals was so excessive that everything in the school was made into chaos. So I think breaking these down, you know, to give a simple start, is that part of this is to hold up those principals, hold up those school communities. And because our communities are so different and require such different schools, to figure out a system that holds everybody accountable for basic education level and also gives them the ability to I'm just going to use the word minister, you know, to educate in their area. So if you have 20% of your population is Hmong, you have a different population from somewhere where you've just had 25 families move in from Liberia. It's a whole, you need to do different things.
And this is about the decentralizing of the central office, the creation of these achievement networks. So it's just part of this proposal, Thomas.
Yes, that's exactly right. The idea is to bring the support systems for the principals and for these groups of principals much closer to the communities and to the parent groups and to the kids and to their teachers.
But I'm thinking back when David Hornbeck was the superintendent of the district. He talked about these clusters. I mean, this has a familiar ring to me, and yet, you know, I frankly can't remember if they did or didn't work, but are we back to clusters, Pedro Ramos?
Well, I think what's fundamentally different about the proposal that Tom's put forth to the SRC is that it's a structure that's about service. It's about accountability. It's even though, at least initially, almost all or virtually all of these networks would be public. School district.
As part of these networks.
Yeah, they'd be constituted by school district people, school district employees anyway. The relationship will be one of service agreements and service accountability. It's not about command and control. It's not about sort of your status in the organization. You are a service provider whose job it is to be accountable to schools and be accountable to the superintendent for how well you support schools, how well you support, including making sure schools have good principals, that they have well-trained teachers, that curriculum's there, that people aren't spending all their time looking around for crayons. It's about a service organization, not about another form of bureaucracy. It's not about taking 440 and breaking it into smaller pieces. It's about creating an organization that revolves around whether or not you're delivering for schools.
And picking up on that accountability, a piece of it, held accountable. So, for instance, if students in a cluster, if they are not doing well enough on these standardized tests, then what would happen to a district like that or a cluster of schools like that or a network? If the goal is to improve education, obviously.
The goal is to ensure that you're doing everything possible and acting very urgently so that every school is safe and that when you send a student to a school and by law compel a student to attend a school, that they have you should have every expectation that they have a good chance of success, which is not the district we have now in a lot of places.
They're winners and losers.
We have a lot of schools that haven't had success in a very long time, and they continue. Mm-hmm. The idea here is that these networks are making sure that the school leadership is right. They're responsible for making sure every school has the school climate that it's going to enable success. It's not about compliance, it's about performance. And I'd say that's the fundamental difference between a traditional school district hierarchical structure and this type of idea that's been put forth by Tom, is that it's really about performance rather than about compliance.
And I do want to pick up on that, but Tom Knutson, let me go back to you. Something that you said to Philadelphia City Council, that if the city doesn't come up with money from these new property assessments, about $91 or $94 million, that the schools won't open in the fall. I mean, it sounded, I don't know if it was a threat or not, but I think for some members of City Council, they perceived it that way.
Yeah, no, it was slightly mischaracterized. What I intended was to say that we would have difficulties opening the schools. We have looked at each of the schools and their specific budgets and determined that it's unacceptable look at those non-mandated portions of the program and say that kids are going to have a fully rounded education if we had to cut some of this more discretionary spending. We're trying not to go there at all. We're hopeful that this action, that the funding that we are counting on will, in fact, be we will realize that $94 million.
And I would say it's also a matter of fundamental fairness. The reality in Philadelphia is that there has not been assessments for at least 3 years, and when that doesn't happen, schools are shortchanged. We've also had a broken system of assessment for decades, and that has caused the system to shortchange the school district, because unlike the rest of government, the school district is heavily dependent on the real estate tax and the use and occupancy tax. So while other governmental entities can make it up with other taxes, the school district can't.
Go ahead, Lorraine.
I just want to say, to put context on this, sometimes we have these discussions and it sounds as if we're okay with the level of funding, and we are not. I want to make that really clear. It is not as if, this is enough money for children. We have, as a society, we've decided to underfund the system. It's not enough money. The fact that we're trying to live within this is its own strategy. One way of thinking about what we're doing is to say, to get right up to it and say it's not enough, and therefore we're just going to overspend, and you have to find the money. This is a different strategy, but we understand that our children deserve more. Children in Lower Merion are educated with nearly twice what we educate our children. We are trying to figure out how to live. You know, this is like daddy's died, mom's lost her job, and we have to move in with Nana.
And hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break, talking with Lorraine Carey, Pedro Ramos, and Thomas Knudsen about a plan to address some of the financial problems facing the School District of Philadelphia, some of the academic problems, achievement issues, and also the issue of safety as well. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is affiliated with the Cleveland Clinic's Heart Surgical Program. Their surgeons are performing breakthrough procedures, including minimally invasive heart valve surgeries. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen with a message you have heard throughout this spring membership campaign here at WHYY. If you listen to WHYY, and in this case Radio Times, take the next step and become a supporter. You know about the in-depth news, analysis, and interviews you hear when you listen, whether it's terrestrial or satellite radio, online, or as a podcast. Surely that's worth your pledge of support. Here's that phone number, 1-888-345-9499, WHYY.org. Thanks.
The Chemical Heritage Foundation supports WHYY. It's tea time at CHF. This first Friday, May 4th, CHF staff will give a step-by-step account of how science helps you make the perfect cup of tea. Visitors will learn how milk and sugar interact and how a teapot's material and shape can impact the resulting beverage. Light refreshments will be provided. Details can be found at chemheritage.org/events.
Supporting WHYY, Bosch Thermo Technology, manufacturer of geothermal heat pumps that use the constant temperature of the earth to heat and cool homes. More information at boschgeo.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about the Philadelphia School District. It's facing a financial and academic and even safety crisis, if I can use that word. The district's chief recovery officer, Thomas Knudsen, said the district could fall off a cliff without a decisive and bold response. He's called for things like school closures, decentralizing administrative services, more autonomy for schools, more charters, and more cuts. Thomas Knudsen is with us here on Radio Times, acting superintendent of the Philadelphia School District. Two representatives of the School Reform Commission are joining us as well. Pedro Ramos is the chair of the SRC and Lorraine Carey, a member of the board. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to move on to other pieces of this, but I want to make sure that we finish talking more about money. And as you were saying, Lorraine, you understand that this is an austerity budget in many ways, but I guess as a way to what? Prove to the state, to prove to others that you can live within the within these means, with the notion of trying to figure out how to get more money in the future?
Yeah, I don't like the proving. We're doing it. It is one strategy to keep money from being the only thing on the table. That's part of it. This so that you don't have to go back to schools and cut them mid-year, so that you give them, at least if it's austerity, you give them some stability that they can then build on. Another thing we keep talking about, we have lots of big headlines talking about privatization.
Yes.
Are you privatizing? And it cows us from talking, honestly, about what we have learned and do learn in this country from private. And I will say this, we have a lot of private money in. At Art Sanctuary, if I go out and I ask and get a grant from the Barra Foundation to bring 1,400 children to the Kimmel Center, and they all have buses, everybody in there, the Kimmel Center, Barra Foundation, everybody in there is private, has put money into that. That's private. We're already doing it everywhere. But we're often stopping schools. We don't acknowledge it, and we're stopping schools from doing the best they can.
Go ahead, Pedro.
I think it's also important to just note what's different. One of the fears that I have is that, you know, there's this regular theater, you know, what the public perceives as a regular annual theater. And much of that in the past, I think, even when it's going on, has failed to acknowledge the extent to which everything before them was based on a weak foundation. When everybody's talking about, you know, this program or that program, and before you use a proposal to spend $600-700 million more than you have, that's what's put us. So I think what's different is we are at a crossroad, and all the cans that have ever been kicked down the road are piled in our path, and we really have to deal with it now. I don't think that we are dealing with the accumulation of all these things that have been pushed forward, and there's no more space ahead of us to push things forward to. We have to deal with it.
Let me turn to you, Thomas Knudsen. Looks like you want to add something, then I want to ask you about charters, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just to address one of those cans that's on the road and get my pitch in. As recovery officer, I'm looking at the balance sheet of the district, and we have about $250 million of tax, real estate tax, and other taxes that are owed us. That we will be making a major initiative, undertaking a major initiative in the next few weeks, to appeal for people to pay those outstanding requirements.
This plan does call for several things related to charter schools. One is to cut some of the money that goes to the existing charter schools, but also to expand the number of charters for students in the city. Are you saying that charters can do a better job than public schools are doing for these students?
The issue of let me just address that the financial question of how charters get their money. That is a matter of a formula, and they will be getting less money in the next few years because our costs are going to be controlled. And to the extent that we control our costs, so are theirs. So they will be getting less revenue than they have in the past.
How much less?
And that's pursuant to a state formula.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
because
the district is going to have less money.
That's correct.
Right.
And their reimbursement rate is a function of how much we spend. So that is the case. To the question of the quality of charter education. In the research that we have been undertaking, we have looked at compared charter performance to a district performance. And what's interesting is that when you look at really the bulk of schools, the performance in the elementary and middle schools is not different from district schools. Except for a group of charter maintenance or charter operations that are clearly better, that are on a different trajectory from the most of them, but
which are those? Just so we know what we're talking about, KIPP, I'm assuming.
Yes, it would be the charter maintenance charter organizations like that. All right, master.
Well, and there are also independent charter schools that do better. I think the overall message is they also have a curve that's about the same as the district. Right. Theirs is a slightly better in the aggregate. There are plenty of situations where in the schools where the district has failed for a long time, you do have many cases where charter school operators have been able to do better in the same circumstances. And one example of that is the Renaissance Initiative that was started under Dr. Arlene Ackerman, under which we've had a fair amount of academic success thus far. And in that situation, the children, the parents, the building, the neighborhood, everything stays the same except for the leadership and the team and the fact that you get to reconstitute that team and have a charter operator, in the case of Promise Academies, a new district team running it. And those have turned around schools that for decades were on a terrible trajectory.
Well, I guess the word privatization comes up, which is that if you have more students going to more charters, that does privatize the system, doesn't it?
Well, charter schools are public schools.
What? I mean, they receive public funds.
Well, they are public. No, under law, they are public schools. They're trustees, they're boards. Whether they all know it or not, are public officials just like Lorene and I are. So they are public schools under law. They've got they have obligations. They have some rules that are different than traditional district-run schools, but they are public schools.
Go ahead, Lorene.
The other thing is if we right now are at a place where a quarter of our schools are charter. Those are the cards. That's how they lie.
Lying.
Lord, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, gee, that's better. Those are the cards. Play them as they lay.
Yes.
What we learn, if we pay attention and we're careful with our learning from that, then we can transfer some of that learning throughout the district. Then we can work on partnerships that help all of those schools do better. And I think if we only go ideologically, and I'll tell you, the ideology doesn't change what we have right now. If we just go on, that's private and I'm against it. Well, in fact, it is public. We do manage it. How can we make sure that we talk to all those schools about whom they enroll? The Renaissance Initiative is a perfect example. Many people will say charters were started so that there could be sort of crazy risk-taking different kinds, and they shouldn't be just turnaround. Well, that's ideological. You can argue it, and, you know, go tell the people at 56 and Christian Street whose school now is a hub, and they're delighted, and the parents insist that you come in and see how safe it is and how happy the kids are.
But it seems to me and we've done shows on this before. I mean, the goal is to create better schools
Period.
For
yes.
all children
Period.
In
Done.
The city of Philadelphia. And it seems to me you get that with
good teachers. You get that with yes. classroom materials. You get that with interested, committed parents. You get that with experiences, with a curriculum that is beyond the sort of reading, writing, and arithmetic. That seems to me that's what works. I don't know. Does this system create that? That's what I'm struggling with.
I have some issue with the extent to which the discussion becomes very ideological very quickly. Because for me, safe, high-quality schools for all children and doing that urgently is not an ideology. It's a mission. Having fiscally sustainable schools, knowing that there's going to be a school district there to provide for our children 5 years from now, is not an ideology. It's a duty. And I think part of what is critical for the district is, and this is very different, I have to say, from the mindset 10, 15 years ago. We now know that we can act much more urgently. We don't have to end poverty before we can make better schools. We don't have to take 12 or 18 years to turn around schools. We now know through efforts at the district and efforts by the district in partnership with nonprofit charter schools that schools where children have been given up on for a long time are doing well and are thriving, and they're the same children in the same building in the same community with the same social challenges. And 1 year, everybody had given up and everybody blamed poverty and the kids and the parents. And the next year, you've got a different climate. 2 years later, you have dramatically different and improving educational performance. And part of that, yeah, it's all the things that you talk about. But we also have to acknowledge the 800-pound gorilla in the room,
which is
– you know, if doing all those things requires that you be able to build a school climate that works for everybody. And there are impediments that under which the district operates to do that. And part of that is that as an organization, when its costs go up in good times, it's unable to bring those costs down in bad times. So you end up creating chaos in the schools. The other is you have under rules that the school district itself has agreed to over time, seniority that's system wide, where people outside of a building can, because of their seniority in the system as opposed to whether they fit the program in the building, can bump somebody out. The inability of a principal to really form and retain and build a cohesive team over time. Those are things that, yeah, charter schools do have an ability to do that when district schools can't. And they also, I think, have done a better job than the district has about acknowledging the concern that parents have about safety. And too often, the choice is entirely about safety, even when the schools aren't better.
And that's Pedro Ramos. He's chairman of the School Reform Commission. Also with us, Lorene Carey. She's a member of the School Reform Commission. And Thomas Knudsen with us as well, acting superintendent and chief recovery officer for the School District of Philadelphia. We do have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And I do want to get those callers, but I want to pick up on something that Pedro said and turn to you, Thomas Knudsen, which is, then how do you get the union, the teacher union, the custodial union, how do you get them in on this proposal to support it, to be part of it?
Well, I think the severity of the situation and the cliff that I referred to earlier has to set a tone for a conversation going forward. We are already in active conversations with the custodians and the drivers, asking them to look seriously at how we can operate the systems better. We've given them a target, and those conversations are ongoing. We would anticipate doing the same thing with the teachers' unions. These are tough times, and we hope that their response will be a positive one when we start that conversation.
Well, the context nationally is that all over the country, teachers' unions and guilds are coming up with some very interesting. They're the ones who are driving some of the conversations in different parts of the country about how to do the job better. So we know that's true.
And not to just focus on some of the negativity, but certainly this proposal talks about right-sizing and streamlining.
Correct.
And I think some have interpreted that meaning get rid of the unions. I mean, bring in a private company, lower your costs by lowering wages, lowering benefits.
No, in terms of the unions addressing the 32BJ, which has to do with custodian and drivers.
Right.
No, we've been very clear that we want to work with them. We're not there to eliminate them, but the world is different. They must provide a level of service and in a different way from how they have proceeded historically.
And I think public sector unions, for the most part, get that. I think it's in the education arena, especially locally, it's been. I think that message has been slower in getting there. You mentioned health benefits.
Yes.
These are all things that the district has agreed to in the past. This is not about putting it all on labor, but what the district has agreed to in the past includes the type of health benefits that traditionally, you know, used to be the great benefit of working for government or being in a union where you didn't have to contribute from your salary towards your medical benefits. And much of the private and the public sector have long ago realized that's unsustainable. And
those days are
over for everybody else.
Well, and again, just one more thing here, but I have to quote Jerry Jordan. He's the PFT president, describing this proposal as a cynical right-wing market-driven plan to privatize public education, force thousands of economically disadvantaged families to select from an underfunded hodgepodge of EMO and charter company-run schools, and to convert thousands of professional families sustaining positions into low-paying, high-turnover jobs.
That is his position.
And he speaks for the union.
It's quite a collection of words designed to incite emotion. First of all, when he talks about charter schools or public schools, their entry level salaries for the most part are higher than ours. Now, they're trade-offs because they don't have workforce that's as senior as ours, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but that is, and their medical benefits sometimes are similar, sometimes not, but often less costly. I would like to get to the point in our community where the conversation is not about one type of ideology over another or one type of bureaucracy over another. I've never heard them defend the bureaucracy of 440 so vehemently. 440 being the school district administration building,
the downtown building.
When it comes to our parents, when it comes to our taxpayers, I do think that we are going to get to the point where we will talk about what the point is, which is a school safe? Is a school providing a safe, high quality opportunity for kids? Is it preparing them for the world in which they're going to live? And are you doing that in a way that you can continue to do it? And you can't get away from that. This discussion argument about it's a limited few group of people that care that much about the ideology or the institutions here. This really should be a discussion about how quickly we can get children into better schools.
Let's take another short break. We've got a lot of callers that want to join our conversation, and that is what we're talking about today on Radio Times with Pedro Ramos, the voice you just heard, chairman of the School Reform Commission, with Loreen Carey, a member of the School Reform Commission, and Thomas Knudsen, acting superintendent, chief recovery officer for the School District of Philadelphia. Just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. On now at 1812 Productions, Boston Marriage, the celebrated comedy by renowned American playwright David Mamet. Boston Marriage stars Grace Gunglewski and Suzanne O'Donnell as a most unconventional couple in this comedy full of sharp barbs, intense loyalty, and more than a little scandal. Boston Marriage runs through May 20th only. Tickets and info at www.1812productions.org.
I'm Marty Moscoane. Public broadcasting has an unusual and very successful business model that has thrived for decades. It's really very simple. We produce high-quality news and interview programs. You listen to them, and then you become a member. You do that by making a pledge of support by calling 1-888-345-9499. Again, 1-888-345-WHYY. We offer so many new features on our website. You can pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks very much.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY and announces the launch of My Fox Chase, a web portal providing secure online communications and access to vital medical information. Fox Chase patients now have immediate 24/7 access to lab results and appointment schedules and can send secure messages to their healthcare team. Physicians can refer patients online and can be kept apprised of patients' progress. More about My Fox Chase at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, hearts plus minds.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about a plan here in the city of Philadelphia to try to address some of the financial, academic, and safety issues facing students going to school in this city. And we're talking about a plan that includes things like school closures, cuts in benefits and wages, creation of networks to run clusters of schools, a college and career-ready curriculum, transferring more students to charter schools, and the results, at least our guests, hope will be to create better and safer schools. And our guests are Lorene Carey, a board member of the School Reform Commission, Pedro Ramos, chair of the SRC, and Thomas Knudsen, he's acting superintendent and is the person that introduced this proposal last week. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear from you if you send your children to school in Philadelphia. Let me get, looks like Alex from Mount Airy to join us. And Alex, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes. I'm a retired counselor, and I'm thinking that we need to, above all, in a way, retain the neighborhood schools so that they're close enough to the people who care most to have the great resources that are available in communities that aren't paid that could be mobilized to fill in a lot of the gaps and, in fact, enrich the whole life and climate of the schools.
Well, Alex,
I'm not talking about home and school meetings.
No, I understand. You're talking about people.
There are a lot of sure. laid-off people and retired people who are talented and would like to play a role in the lives of the next generation. And I don't think we have to worry about children learning. They're born to learn, and they're just waiting for the right climate and encouragement mm-hmm. to set them free to do that.
All right. Well, Alex, let me take your call, and I'll toss it to you, Lorene, because you were talking about the notion of creating these districts and districts that serve the local community.
Yeah, thank you, Alex, for that and for also for your work with children, because one of the things that happens in these discussions, all of us have issues about money. Maybe you don't, Marty. I do. Everybody
sure.
does. And when we keep talking about less and less and poor, no matter what, it ends up smearing on the children. And so it sounds as if we're in some way or other saying that the children are anything other than they are. Alex is so right. They learn no matter what. They are beautiful. They are ready to go. They are plug and play for learning. And we also have a history. The other history, and Pedro talked about kicking things down the can. The other thing we've kicked down the can is a very long disinvestment in this community from those who have the means to go elsewhere. We've had a disinvestment of those people from this community. And consequently, part of the anger and the rage and the frustration that you feel is that among parents is we have not said we want to hold these children in the light. We have not said we want to give them the absolute best. And some of the best people to do that are retired folks. And I'll say again, just because I was at Mifflin yesterday, so I was there with three retired teachers. I was there with one lady who had on black high heels and a box with bugs in it. I didn't know where she was taking it. And there was a an arts teacher from Philadelphia University who was going to arrange a trip after the children had finished this. They did a little peaceful posse for some weeks about how do you deal with anger. And then they were doing these art lessons where they make the pillows, they do lessons they've learned, they write thank you notes. And then they're going to go over to Philadelphia University and make these – all of that takes volunteers. All of that takes people who care about them. And in some ways, the other thing that this plan is trying to do is cut down some of the bureaucracy that makes it harder for those people. Mm-hmm. So they had to go find a community council who would pay for some of – there was yet another insurance certification that had to – as a hoop to be jumped. There was yet another licensing that had to be jumped. There were so many things that had to happen before these wonderful people could come in and be with young people. We need to be taking care of that for schools.
But do you think this plan would do that, would streamline some of these services and open the door for people like Alex and others that want to help out in some of these schools?
That is certainly the point. That is what the planning has been done to in part to achieve, yes.
Well, I think on two levels. One is, Laureen says, making it easier to partner with the district. We hear over and over again how hard it is when you do have something, time, talent, or treasure to offer the school district, how hard it is to partner with the district. The other is, my guess is in these situations, you also have good leadership. These are the byproducts of good leadership. And we have a lot of extraordinary people doing extraordinary things in our schools, in our classrooms, and in our and as principals. We need to make sure that we are supporting and building and training principals in a way that makes that type of leadership possible. And frankly, the schools of education, the colleges aren't doing that much of a good job either because they tend to train administrators about compliance. Huh. We have to also look at the skills that we're expecting of people in leadership positions in school buildings because these types of skills are increasingly necessary. What hopefully a structure like what Tom's proposed will do in the networks is perhaps free up the principal from being the one that has to chase all these insurance forms around or figure out where the supply delivery is and let them be a principal instructor in a school. Let them lead and hold other people absolutely accountable for making sure that the supports that have to be in that school are in that school.
What I've heard principals say, is that they want to be the ones who go out and make the changes, not the ones who are left holding the bag.
Yeah. Let me ask you something else, Thomas Knudsen, because this plan also calls for closing dozens of schools in the city. I know that the capacity is something like 67%, so clearly there is an overcapacity of schools. How are you going to decide? How is the decision to be made that this school will be closed and this will remain open? Is there criteria?
Let me be clear. We are not closing schools. We are closing structures. We are closing buildings. The programs that are contained in those schools may very well go to another building that is safer or better designed for what the principals are trying to do. The issue on buildings basically arises out of the fact that we've lost 25% of the enrollment to the charters. Right. They didn't occupy the buildings that were essentially dropping in utilization. We have overall utilization about 75%. We are saying that we want to raise that utilization rate to about 85%. In doing that, we would then be closing at least 40 buildings. We have not identified what those buildings are yet. But we are in the process of developing standards and criteria, and the commission has just recently essentially closed 8 schools for which they developed quite a detailed list of such criteria. And we would approach these additional 40 much the same way, and probably adding to those requirements, attempting to be much more sensitive to exactly what the impacts on neighborhoods and communities are going to be.
And Marty, you have to remember also that when you spend money on empty space, that's money that could be going into a classroom. The footprint of the school district is basically the same as it was about 12 years ago, and yet there are 50 to 60,000 fewer students, and there are 80 new charter schools in the community. So, I mean, now how you go about doing that, we learned a lot in the process we just went through with the closings we had. I think people actually received that process well. There was a lot of community outreach. I think SRC members were almost at every community meeting. And at the end of the day, I think people felt that the decisions that were made were fair and that everybody had been listened to.
We are trying to figure out how to do it and how to acknowledge the loss. Just want to say it's a big loss. It's huge loss.
Sure.
What Alex was talking about with neighborhood schools is huge. But we need to acknowledge it and do what's right and not kick down the road.
And it's a concern about loss of school community. It's also a concern about blight. And we recognize that.
Empty buildings, right? Yes. The problem of that. Let me get Michael from Bristol to join us on Radio Times. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, if the charter schools are going to be expanded, is there transparency to know for every charter school which schools are doing the most per dollar in quality education for the students? And if there's no website for that, will it be in place for the new charter schools and eventually the public schools? So everything will be transparent on all the factors needed for quality education.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Thank you, Michael. Great question. And short answer is yes, at least to some extent, with respect to the data that the school district has. We have something called the School Performance Index, which is a performance measure for schools. It's one of the things that we produce. That's available for all school district schools and all charter schools on the school district's website, philasd.org. We've also, this year, as part of the SRC's decision-making process on renewal recommendations, are posting all the reports that we get from staff about schools, and good or bad, both the analysis of the application for renewal as well as detailed information from school visits.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to you, Thomas Knudsen. You worked with this Boston Consulting Group. They were advisors in helping to put together this plan. Have they worked with other districts? Are there other districts that you or they could point to say, you know, we did this here and it worked and it was this, you know, the combination of things that we have been talking about?
Yeah, we started working with them in mid-February. We did an extensive screening of consulting firms who had worked around the country. And the Boston Consulting Group clearly had the strongest credential. They had worked in New Orleans. They had worked in Tampa, which is a system that's very similar in size to ours. We've also done research and referenced work that they had done in Chicago and some in New York. So they come at this with a variety of backgrounds. I think what's most important is that this is not a system or a proposal that is lifted from someplace else.
A kind of one-size-fits-all
approach. It's not that at all. What we've attempted very much to do is to take the lessons learned from some of these decentralization efforts, and there have been some for a number of years now, and tailor them to Philadelphia, and also address some of the weaknesses that have existed in some of these other models. Mm-hmm. We've taken for example, this whole issue of a contract between the network managers or support groups and the central office and the SRC, that is fairly unique to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we want to be sure that we are getting the bang for the buck, as the gentleman has
mentioned. And one of the cautionary tales from those other cities is also, and that's a burden on us, is, for example, in New York, where they've had some version of this, is they didn't shrink the central bureaucracy. They created a secondary bureaucracy. So we also are aware of that, and we're mindful of that. But we do know that the structure we have is not serving all our schools well.
And you are listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get, looks like Pat from Newark, Delaware to join us. And Pat, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi.
I like to believe that if the schools would focus a little more on getting the students' careers right out of school, because the cost of college is so expensive right out of high school that it almost becomes inviable. And oftentimes, students don't know what they want to do until after, you know, like they're 25. So this way they would have something to earn a living at until they can afford college, until they know what it is that they want to do.
Well, Pat, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And there is a call. There's not a lot of detail yet. A college and career-ready curriculum. What does that mean, Pedro Ramos?
Well, I think first it's an acknowledgement that the district has come short in keeping pace with the needs of career technical education. We have a system for vocational education that I think has been outdated and structured in a way that always stays a little outdated. It's an area, this School Reform Commission, when it was set up, when new SRC members got here, we set up only four committees. One of them is led by Chancellor Wendell Pritchett, is focusing a lot on career technical education. We recently brought in somebody from Lehigh, who is regarded as probably one of the top people in this region, if not nationally, to really lead us through this, and he's reporting directly to the SRC on this, because we were worried that, one, we were out of date, and two, we weren't thinking big enough, and it's a critical part of the work that's still ahead, and that I think the good news is it's been acknowledged, and I think there's a new effort and recognition of the need to do the work.
And maybe an unfair question to you, Lorraine, because we're almost out of time here. So, what would success look like? If this succeeds, what will the results be?
I think
you have 20 seconds. I'm sorry.
If it succeeds, the results will be that every child is able to read, write, count, do arts, and have self-discipline so that they can function as adults. I think in addition there would be wonderful enrichments, but that everybody would get that basic. Each one of them deserves it.
My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Just got the conversation started. We do have to end it. Lorraine Carey, Pedro Ramos, and Thomas Knudsen. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. You can send us an email, check us out on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. Do stay tuned for Hour 2 coming up next.